Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The base is loaded and one out.
Oh, my God.
Deep to right field. Way up there and way out of here. Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam.
Hello and welcome in, everyone, to episode 170. That is 170 of the Base is Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Curlin. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. That was as much enthusiasm as I can muster up. Today is what, March 9th, and we had a deal on, had a deal on, off, and we'll talk a little bit about that, but we're going to be focusing on outfield preview because why not? Tonight I'm joined by the usual. Zach is with me again this week, and George is back. You can follow them on Twitter. George is at @Roto_Nino. Zach is at BraffZ. Gentlemen, hello.
What's up, man? I mean, at least one of us is lively here. You know, I'm gonna just say, like, I'm emotionally drained at this point. All this up and down with the negotiations. You know, you get your hopes up just to be let down. But it is what it is. You know, hopefully they can get that settled soon. I mean, it seems like they're close, right? I mean, whatever, as far as we know, seems like they're pretty close there. So hopefully we get games not too much further than that April 14th date that they came out with today that they've canceled games through. So,
Zach, I saw your face on that intro. You were pleasantly surprised and pleased by it, right?
Yeah. I don't know how you're so enthusiastic right now.
It's all a facade, man. Listen, you have kids. You get it. You got to put on a fake face, a fake smile once in a while, get through, push through. That's what this is. Yeah. I'm so excited to be here as right before I press play, I was like, I don't want to do this. Play. Hey, everybody. I'm sure people listening understand that. But just to be honest, this isn't easy for us to push sometimes because it is. It just keeps you down. It makes you wonder, is it worth it? It makes you start questioning everything. Like, why do I love baseball so much? Why do I produce content? But it's like, I'm not going to leave. I enjoy doing it. I really do. It's just hard to get, it's hard to press play, but usually once we start, it starts going well. And I already haven't shut up yet. So there we go. One thing I did notice about this though, is that the whole like Manfred suggested something. The players said, yes, the players went back to the MLB themselves, the owners, and said, hey, we refuse your offer, but here's this. And they said, nope. And even though, you know, Manfred is the mouthpiece of the owners. So if Manfred suggested this and the players okayed it, the owners suggested it. But then the owner said no because it came in like an hour after six, which was the 15th deadline. So it's like they're looking for excuses. Yeah, yeah. They're looking for excuses to blame the players. And on top of that, what they did was wait until everything was so close with the money to harp so hardly on this one thing that has been kind of thrown out there multiple times, apparently, with the whole international draft thing. That's been thrown out so many times, apparently, and the players every time said no, no, no. So the owners kind of just sat on that, and when everything else was close and within striking distance, they brought this up knowing the players weren't going to budge on it. So now it looks like now they made the players look bad again. It was a very smart move. There's a reason why these owners are billionaires. They know what they're doing with these tactics. It's just frustrating because things are very close but very far, it seems like, and it sounds like it's like they can figure this out in a day or two. I don't know how it's not figured out already. It's just aggravating that the owners are so good at making the players look bad. But don't get me wrong, the players aren't fully innocent in all this either. It's just the owners knew how to play this to the very end, to where the sentiments are kind of shifting, at least even on social media, where it was maybe it was towards the middle, maybe more player, you know, people on the player side, to where people are starting to blame the players more and calling the players greedy, and it's aggravating, but the owners just played it just right, it seems like. And that frustrates me because I found myself mad at the players, and I was like, wait, let me take a step back and look. It's the owners just playing the game, and you can't fault them for that.
it's not to trust either side at this. And it almost seems like the owner side, they're just like feeding all these reporters information. All those tweets last night were getting our hopes up super high, and then we just let down today. And it's just like you don't even know who to trust at this point. And it's frustrating, and it's just hard to get excited about the sport and fantasy right now. We don't know when this is going to happen, if it's going to happen. It's just, I don't know. It's just all in limbo, and it sucks. It really sucks right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, well, I do trust. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Zach.
I was going to say the day is going to come. The day is going to come. You know, right now, just everything sucks. But the day will come where there is an agreement and we get a flood of news and Twitter will be ablaze and we'll be excited for baseball again.
And until then, though, I get to sit here and just stare at legitimately three or four articles I have written and not sure on the status of when they'll get posted, because I don't know, because we don't know anything. I think right now it's too murky to post any article, because anything, especially stuff I'm covering right now, it can change. And you know what? Let's talk about outfield, I guess. It's about that time. We're going to start with strategy and then kind of just discuss our targets. We're not going to go player by player because the outfield pool is like, you know, depends on how deep you want to go, depending on, you know, the level of league you want to touch on. So we're going to essentially talk about our overall strategy and outlook of the position. Then we'll talk about some of our favorite early round targets, some of the middle round guys we like, and then some late round dart throws. That way we touch on the position as a whole without over analyzing it, because there's just so many names. And then there's the obvious crossover of second base / outfielders, et cetera, et cetera. So with that said, George, do you want to start off with your typical overall outlook on the position and strategy in a typical league?
Yeah, so, you know, we've been doing a lot of, I've been doing a lot of like 15-team drafts this draft season and stuff. And you'll find that, I mean, you know, we've kind of mentioned it before in previous pods that, you know, the outfield pool, as far as players, you know, everyday players that you can count on for playing time, kind of dries up, at least as far as players that we like, dries up. And yeah, at least like in five outfielder leagues, like 15-team five outfielder leagues, I like to have my five outfield spots filled by maybe about the 16th, 17th round. So we're talking about pick 250, 255. That's about the time where I want to have my outfield filled. Now, if we're talking about like three out shallower, you know, like a head-to-head three outfielder type of league, I mean, it's not as you still want some of the higher end guys, but it is much easier to fill. It might be one of those where, yeah, I want to take, like, you know, have one or two really like elite outfielders, and then have a couple of my favorite, you know, sleeper breakout targets and stuff. So it's easier. It's definitely easier when you're talking like shallower leagues. But yeah, you know, this year I don't mind filling outfield a little earlier, just because, you know, I don't mind taking like two outfielders early, just because like I mentioned, I think it gets a bit shallow the you know, once you get into that 250 range.
I looked at the ADP on NFBC over the last month. I forgot, I need to sort it by draft champions real quick. But in general, I'm pretty sure it's not gonna change much. It's over the last month, and I'm almost positive it's still the same nine players in the top 50 are multi-positional eligible at outfield. So you have to think about that. In the top 50, nine of those players might not even be in your outfield. Names including Tatis with Merrifield, Edmund, Marte. Varsho is definitely a catcher for you. Chris Bryant, third base. You know, Mountcastle, it can go either way, I get, because first base is kind of deep. Chris Taylor, super util, most likely your middle infielder compared to your outfielder if you can make him that way. Kirilloff, first base, that's part of that first base depth. So those are the names that are multi-positional eligible, and there's nine of them. So outfield, like you mentioned, it goes from looking a little deeper to not as deep if you start taking some of these nine names away in the top 50 alone and putting them elsewhere. These are the higher end outfielders. So I'm with you. I like to target at least, I like to try to get two in the first, you know, 10 or so rounds, I'd say, if I can, and kind of I'll build at that point. And then, but in three outfielder leagues, I'll just take one. And if I take one, I won't really focus on the outfield for a while, because I do like the depth of outfield in a shallower format. But my big thing is early rounds in general, I don't really care about positional scarcity or lack thereof. Like, I won't go out of my way to get, like, I'll take a third baseman a little earlier maybe, but that's it. Like, but if I miss on the top three, I don't go pushing up the rest. Does that, you know what I mean? But in the first few rounds, I like to just take what the draft gives me. I've never been big on, oh, I don't want this guy because he's an outfielder. So even in a shallower format, yeah, that would only become like a tiebreaker type of thing. Do I want this guy who's like really elite at second base, knowing how deep outfield is in a shallower league? Sure, that might be why I take Whit Merrifield over insert outfield Teoscar or something. You know what I mean? Maybe that's the decision you make because outfield is so much deeper in terms of elite depth compared to elite depth at second base. So that would be a tiebreaker in a shallower format. But in a deeper league, I honestly don't look at positions that early. I tend to just take the best players that I want to build around and then go from there and adapt my approach from after the first 2 to 3 rounds, honestly. See what fell to me, see what I started with, and then formulate my plan from there. I don't go in. I've never been a guy to really think beyond that. Like, it's just, maybe it's to my detriment, but it's just a personal preference.
Sorry, George. No, I was just going to say that's kind of the way to do it. That's the way to approach your drafts is, you know, you see what you have built through, you know, 3-4 rounds, and you're from there, you're taking, you know, what you need. You know, yeah, I like to build around, you know, stats. I don't really look at position as much, like you mentioned. And as you go through the draft, you're kind of taking what you need.
Position matters more as the draft goes on, because obviously you could be like me in TGFBI, which I talked about how much I hated my outfield, because I got those two outfielders, and then I waited too long on 3 through 5, and it's because I filled other positions in between, because I kind of just lost sight of the position. I was just more so targeting the stats. My team ended up coming out as a mid-tier projected team, which is fine in a fab league. If I'm projected in the middle, that's fine, because so much is going to happen, good or bad. That and there's fab and waiver wire. I'm not too concerned. But Zach, outfield, how do you treat it?
I'm kind of with both of you guys and everything you said here. Three outfielders, I prefer probably just taking one stud early, first or second round, and I'm okay with waiting just because there's really some good value. But based on our talks last week, Mike, with the five outfielders and how your team rounded out and how you did not like your outfielders, I kind of pounded outfielders in my recent draft, and I actually really like how it turned out. I kind of filled out those spots by pick 250, kind of what George is saying, how it really does dry up after 250, after 300. So there really are some good values in there. I kind of like going outfield maybe first or second round and then waiting on maybe that next tier, like the Aaron Judge, the O'Neill, Buxton, or Rosarena. Just don't love that tier right there when you can wait a little bit longer, closer to like pick 100, and you can get a guy like JD or Brian Reynolds, or hope for a bounce back from like a Bellinger or a Yelich or Jesse Winker. And if you miss out on steals early, you got Miles Straw there as well, although there's some risk with that. But there really are some good values. If you don't get the power that you're looking for early, there's values late within that top one, later in the top 100 there, closer to 100, some good power values. But there really is some good players there, kind of in the middle between like 25 to 30 for outfielder ranks that I really do like this year. And I'm targeting a lot of those guys. So it does thin out very quickly, like what George was saying. So especially in a deep league, if you need depth in five outfielders, it's definitely something that I would like to target early. And like you were saying, Mike, there really are a lot of multi-eligible guys that can help out your team and help with that flexibility. So it's an intriguing position this year, and I've been attacking it earlier than other positions in the few drafts that I've done so far.
Gotcha. And by the way, I know you listen back to these shows. So right around that 6-minute mark, your headset came off and I said some really nice things about you.
I'll be sure to listen back.
There it is. But speaking of the outfield, nothing that bad. It was just kind of telling people how much I love you. As I was saying, so we're going to focus on the early rounds a little bit. You're going to be able to talk about those mid-round guys you like, Zach, because we're going to talk about a little bit about mid-rounds and talk about some deeper league stuff. So focusing at the top, we're not going to go player by player or anything, but just before we get into some of our targets, overall, Luis Robert, Mookie Betts, Mike Trout, I think we've talked about this group a little bit before, but right now, George, if I told you to rank them, how would you rank them?
Between
Robert, Betts, Trout.
Betts and
right
Trout.
Right now, over the last month in draft champions formats, it's been, that's the order. Robert, Robert, I give up. I need to find out how he says his name. I always forget. So Lubob,
I think it is Robert.
Lubob Betts. Lubob Betts Trout. I will find the proper pronunciation. I literally always forget. I look it up often and I just forget because I've gone back and forth so many times, which I apologize for.
Said it was Robert, and then other people came out and said it was Robert. I don't, it's confusing. But
okay, anyway, Lubob Betts Trout for like the eighth time. Rank them.
I think I rank them just like that. Robert, Betts, and Trout. I mean, I think it comes down to now, as long as we're talking about, you know, your standard 5x5 roto league, that's how I go. Obviously, things change if it's a different format, you know, if it's like OBP or points. I think Mike Trout there, you know, takes a big, big leap, but. If we're talking roto, I mean, we know that, you know, we could talk about positional scarcity, but category scarcity is, you know, might be the biggest factor here when you're looking at speed and trying to get those steals early on, because we know that, you know, through the first four or five rounds, that's where all the steals go. So, you know, yeah, I want to targeting. I don't mind taking Luis Robert at the end of the first. Or in if he falls into the second, and then Betts. I mean, I'm just a little concerned with, you know, how much more he's going to run at this point of his career. I could see the speed drying up a bit. You know, so I'm not sure if we can count on him for, you know, to approach like 20 steals again, but, you know, maybe 10. And Trout, you know, we kind of know about Trout's issues as far as injury and not too sure, you know, if he's going to be running anymore at this point. I'm not sure if you can count on more than maybe a handful from Mike Trout. So, yeah, that's how I would rank them.
And what about you, Zach? How would you rank those same three?
In Roto.
Robert, Betts, Trout. We'll start with Roto, go to points after
Great.
That.
In Roto, I would do Robert, Betts, Trout. Points, though, like George said, you know, that kind of changes things. We'd probably go the reverse. I would probably go Trout, Betts, Robert for points. Really, in points, the stolen bases don't matter nearly as much. The on-base percentage has a much bigger effect on those ranks. So I would flip them for points rankings.
Gotcha. I mean, it sounds like that's kind of where I'm at, too. I think I go back and forth on Betts and Trout. I think I'm going to put Trout ahead of Betts in both. I just have this gut feeling about, like, I don't know. I'm not ready. And maybe it's my own detriment. I don't have any Trout or Betts on any teams, by the way, but I want Trout. I need to have, there is some serious FOMO in this top 15. I'll talk about, there's three guys. I have FOMO on three guys, Trout being one of them. And I will get some Mike Trout on my teams before draft season's over, but I don't think he's done being Mike Trout. And I feel like he's just suddenly, people are just kind of like, I don't know, people are writing him off. I think what at worst we're getting a Coors Field type of Arenado production for Trout.
People really are writing him off.
Which I do understand the speed is a question coming off a calf injury, all that for Trout. I do understand that, but I'm willing to take Trout in the second round. Like, oh my God, it's such a big, I'm willing to take him. I think you could build, as long as you're willing to kind of maybe you don't take closer earlier, or maybe you kind of let starting pitching fall a little bit. Maybe you go with more of a Max Fried, Kevin Gausman type of duo. But if you start off with three hitters, you can definitely build a solid core of offense with Trout as one of your three hitters. So that's why it's like there are builds out there that you can definitely support Mike Trout's skill set, which is crazy to ever have to say those words. But I do think Trout's days of running are behind him. So yes, it's not.
He's not even projected for 10 stolen bases this year,
which is fine. But that's the thing. Like, you can build around that. No, you just have to know that when you're going into it. Like, you have to know you're taking that. You know what I mean?
I could see him getting closer to like 15 stolen bases. I think
I don't see him running that much, man. That calf injury, I don't see him risking it.
We'll see. I mean, it really depends. Obviously, we haven't heard much of anything about his recovery at all.
I think it was Derek Rhodes on CBS was talking about it. I was listening to it. His injury stuff is like up there with some of the best in our fantasy circles. And he was mentioning how the calf injury is, Trout was saying back in September that it was basically 100%. So there's no reason to think, unless he aggravated it without any knowledge, he was set to be 100% in like entering October-ish, I think. So there's no reason to think he won't be 100% entering spring or summer training, whenever we get baseball training going on. beyond those,
though, he's really been a FOMO of mine too. Really been trying to target him in the second round as much as I can. Missed out every time, but I had the
opportunity. I had the chance. I took Machado because I just can't pass and
you fell asleep.
Yeah, right. I just wanted Machado. I just like Machado so much as a third baseman with a little bit of speed that I passed on Machado for. I passed on Trout for Machado, but not that I can go back and look at that and think I regret that. But I do wish I just took Trout just because I think I could have built a team just fine around him. I don't know. I'm not anti-Trout like a lot of the industry is. I know high stakes leagues. The shallower the format, the more you should push them up because of the ceiling. So there is that. I do think ADP and ranks and everything are skewed towards deeper formats, but I do think that's you have to know that and you have to be able to take advantage. Anyway, so, no, I didn't want to focus so heavily on the top names. Is there anybody? Okay, look at the top 15. Zach, I don't know. I can't even share this. I can share my screen with you, I guess. Let's see this screen here. I'll share that way you can look at the same ADP I'm looking at. Do you see it? Oh, here, I'm going to get bigger. You see the ADP I'm looking at?
Yes.
Okay, so inside the top 15, this is over the last month, top 15, who is a guy? Give me one guy that you love to target, one guy you love to fade. George, start with you.
All right, so top 15. Sorry, I had had an ambulance passing by. So
nice. Not ideal when we're talking about Trout and then ambulance. Like, oh no, is that foresight? Is that like
an omen?
Is that like what's it called? What's that thing called? Foresight, I guess. But it's there's a word for it. Anyways, I'm sure someone's thinking it. Anyway, go ahead.
It's a bad omen. That's top 15 guys, a guy I would fade, a guy and a guy I would target. Honestly, I'm not with you on Trout. I'm fading Trout where he's going, at least
bastard.
Like I said, like in roto leagues, category leagues. Yeah, I'm not willing to take him where he's going there at pick 16. A guy I like who I think, you know, can give us what we want from Trout. Going at 33, Teoscar Hernandez. I don't see a whole lot different here. I mean, obviously we know Mike Trout is on another level kind of player. But as far as like roto, you know, stats for fantasy, I mean, you look at what Teoscar Hernandez did last year. He cut his strikeout rate down to 24.9%. Hit 296, 346, 524. 32 home runs, 12 steals, 92 runs scored, 116 RBI. He's going to be hitting cleanup for, you know, maybe one of the best lineups in baseball. So, I mean, yeah, going at pick 33, I really like targeting Teoscar Hernandez at the end of the second or anywhere in the third. He's fallen to the back of the third for me at times. And, yeah, I'm scooping up Teoscar there. You know, even with that elevated BABIP 352, I mean, I'm not sure he's going to be able to repeat 296. But if he gives you 260, 270 with 35 homers and, double digit steals, I mean, you'll take that. I will take that over Mike Trout, you know, if Trout's not going to be running anymore, which I really wouldn't project much more than a handful of steals for Trout. Not saying that he can't do it, but. I mean, I'm just going off of what we've seen the last few years. But you look at Teoscar, I mean, you know, 13.9% barrel rate, always had really good, you know, batted ball quality, nearly 50% hard hit rate. The expected stats pretty much back up what he did, 282 expected batting average, 533 expected slug. So, yeah, where he's going, I really like Teoscar.
He dealt with COVID, I believe, in the beginning of last year, too, among other things. I think there was like a COVID, like something was, I remember looking him up for that reason, which he still put up and produced the numbers he did even while dealing with that. Or was that the year? Was that 2020? It's all meshing together right now. I swear it was last year though. If I'm wrong, somebody will tell me. So there's one target, one fade for you, Zach. Do you have your answer?
I do. So I'll start with the fade first. I am very out on Starling Marte this year. Probably won't have him. Any shares. Right now he's going ADP 25. I mean, I know he's a Met. You know, I'm your resident Met fan.
There isn't enough right there to fade him. Yeah. He's a Met.
that is number one right there. The Mets just, they cannot keep guys healthy. That's number one. Marte has not played a full season in quite some time. I mean, he hasn't played 150 games since 2015. He missed a ton of time, missed over 40 games last year. He missed time in 2019. He's not the most durable player. So that he does not have that going, especially in New York. Guys always get hurt in New York. Also, year one, I mean, we saw Lindor last year struggle in year one. I could definitely see Marte struggle. I mean, he played in Miami last year, played in Oakland. I mean, those are not big market teams. I could see, we've seen guys come into and struggle right away. That's reason number two. Reason number three, the Mets do not run a ton. They really haven't been known to. I know that's Marte's game, but I don't think he's going to steal 40 bags. I could see him maybe getting to 30 bags, but I don't think he's going to be a 40, 50 steal guy like some people think, and they're drafting him like that in the second round. So I am out on Starling Marte this year at that price. A name that I really do like is Yordan this year. I don't think anybody could really hate on Yordan Alvarez this year. I really love the idea of grabbing him in the second round and maybe passing on a guy like Vlad in the first. If you can grab some power speed type guy in the first, whether it be like a Bichette or even grabbing a Harper or Robert and coming back around in the second and grabbing Yordan, I love that build. I mean, Yordan projected for almost 40 and 100 this year. I could see him putting up a huge MVP type season. And I love Yordan going at around like pick 30. So Yordan is the guy I'm in on. And Marte, I am very, very out on this year.
Yeah, see, I don't really, I haven't really found myself fading anybody necessarily. So I think the one I fade the most, because it's the one I tend to not target. So by default, I'm fading him, is also Marte. And I think it's just the health. I don't dislike the skill set. It's the fact you mentioned his health. And the thing is, maybe we need to, as a fantasy community, we need to take a look and stop thinking of like 150 games as the new norm. I think we should almost like drop it down to like 140 to 145. If a player gives you 140 games in today's game with all the knickknack injuries, COVID, I don't know how much COVID's going to be factoring into it this year, but you know what I mean? There's just so many things. It's like, I'm almost happy with 140 to 145 games these days. 150, 155 was like the standard to look for. I almost feel like maybe we should lower expectations, but regardless, he's only played 140 games once since 2016, twice in his career, Starling Marte. And although here's the thing about Marte though, is even with the lack of games, he's always produced. He only did hit 12 home runs last year, and those ballparks in Miami and in Oakland make sense. New York's not exactly a great hitter's ballpark. And you mentioned the stresses of signing to New York on you know, the first year could be an issue. We've seen people there struggle. Marte, just, it's a health thing. And I feel like there's players with skill sets that maybe not the same speed profile, but close enough profiles that I trust to stay healthy more. So I think that's why I found myself steering away from Marte at his current ADP. Again, 25.3 over the last month. And in terms of targeting, I'm just a huge Bryce Harper guy, but that's a gimme. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. I'm not anti-Cedric Mullins. I realize I really like Cedric Mullins, and now that he's falling to the third round, I find myself more interested. I don't see much concern or much reason for concern in terms of repeatability. He's going into the same situation, arguably a better lineup, assuming everyone's healthy. That the Orioles were linked to Correa, so if they're willing to spend a little bit, maybe they actually improve the lineup even more. And the RBIs are going to be there, but I don't see how Mullins doesn't go at least 20-20 again. And the field, and it was left field that was pushed back over there in Orioles Park. He pulled all his home runs, and all that could do is possibly lead to more doubles and triples for him, because he doesn't go opposite field much in terms of like for the power. So Mullins is a guy I'm not too concerned, even if you bake in regression, what, 90 runs, 20-20. Maybe 60 RBI, so that's where you have to make up for it, but hit like 270. I really think that the skill set feels safe. He has the tools to suggest that he could repeat a lot of what he did. And I don't know. I know there's a lot of people that are out on him, but he's not the thing is, those here, I think it's harder for me to find who I'm out on than it's easier to find out who I'm out on than it's one of those things. I'm willing to take just about anybody here in the top 15 at the right place, depending on how I build my team.
Well, we're I was just going to say, we're talking about like the first two, three rounds here. And so, you know, they're going here for a reason. Like, I'm pretty much taking anybody aside from, like I mentioned, like if there's anyone that I am out on as far as like in Roto, I'm out on Mike Trout. But I mean, aside from that, there's no one else I can really say that I'm out on. I'm with you on Harper. I also really love Kyle Tucker. I mean, I think Tucker is going to be like just a safe perennial first round pick. Just his profile, you know, cutting down the strikeout rate, his batted ball quality. I mean, you look at a guy that, you know, 15.9% strikeout rate to go with a 11.6% barrel rate. Not a whole lot of hitters could do that. You're talking about like Juan Soto and Vlad type of hitters, right? The low strikeout rate, high barrel rate. So love Kyle Tucker. And I'm with you on Mullins, man. I really don't understand the projections on Mullins as far as his batting average, having him down like at 260. I mean, he had a 322 BABIP. His strikeout rate was only 18%. A 322 BABIP is not egregious for someone with an 86 percentile sprint speed. You know, with his kind of speed, I really don't understand the projections. I really do think that he can hit, you know, 270 at least and go 20-20 again. You mentioned the ballpark, not really going to affect him. So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you on Cedric Mullins. I really like him as a third round pick.
And it's just one of those things that, because I hear a lot of smart people out on him, and that's fine. I get it. It's hard to pay. It's hard to come around and pay the premium on a player who was free the year before. That's never an easy thing to do. It's just a matter of, do you buy the breakout? And in this case, I do. And there was obviously the whole stop hitting from the other side of the plate, blah, blah, blah. Do you have any FOMO in top 15? Because I know, again, I mentioned FOMO, and the reason why I want to bring it up is because I do typically avoid, I'm very risk adverse, but I am going to play some 12s when I start drafting again, and I'll take more chances. And there's three guys. I mentioned Trout being one, but at the bottom end of that top 15, Aaron Judge and Byron Buxton. Buxton, he has the upside to be a first-round pick. Like, that's the type of upside you're getting in the 50s. He's a guy that you have to understand that he just has his inability to stay on the field. It's notable, and it's worth paying attention to. So Buxton's a guy that, in terms of just raw skill set, I want a share of two in a shallower format where you know, you fill in, you can replace them and still get a good amount of stats. So you pair Buxton with a fill-in-the-blank, you know, back-end draft guy, and you still get a good producing outfielder. But if a healthy Buxton can be a first-rounder. But the other one is Aaron Judge. And last year, I tweeted this out December 7th, by the way, and I forgot that he was this healthy last year. Aaron Judge played 148 games. Again, goes back to my argument of, why don't we look at 145-ish to be the new standard in today's game, with how many players just take days off and one IL stint and 5 days off. Next thing you know, he's at 150 already. You know what I mean? Like, that's normal. Like, so 148 and games.
COVID now, missing a few days. Well,
that's what I was saying. I mentioned, I just don't know how much COVID is going to be a thing this year. But yes, maybe that has factored into that's definitely factored into why games have been weird the last couple seasons. Not to mention the shortened season. But Aaron Judge played 148 games. That was the most since 2017. He had the second most home runs of his career at 39. He had a career best 25% strikeout rate and a career best batting average of .287. Overall, you saw Aaron Judge put up 39 home runs, 6 stolen bases, hit .287 with over 900 OPS. Like, do we forget like how good Aaron Judge could be? And it came again, the lack of the cutting down the strikeouts means he put the ball in play more, and that's all he has to do with his size. The ball is going to fly. Aaron Judge was top 10 among qualified hitters in xWOBA, WOBA, and WRC plus. He was 8th in WRC plus at 148, 6th in WOBA at 387, and 4th in xWOBA at 416. AKA Judge was damn good last year and earned it. Like, and I don't have any. I feel like he's as good as Yordan Alvarez, and you're getting him about a round later. And I think we're all hoping. I think what he did last year, that's like, if anybody could take that step forward to be a second round pick again, it would be Judge. He's not going around pick 40. It's not like he's far away from that, but he's a guy that, looking at what he did last year, it's very repeatable, and it's comparable to what you're hoping to get out of Yordan this year. So I don't know. I think I want to get myself a couple of Judge shares on shallower formats where I can bake in the potential for injury, because he is a little, you know, he is known to get injured and get nicked up. So that's it. That's my rant, my long rant about Aaron Judge and why he needs to be on my team.
I hear you on Judge and Buxton. We know like where the upside is there. I think I'm with you a little bit more on Buxton, just because I think that speed can be a real difference maker where he's going. With Judge, yeah. I mean, you know, he did steal 6 bases, but I mean, 6 can easily be 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't project someone like Judge to take a step forward in speed and all of a sudden steal, you know, 10, 12, 15 bases. So, you know, if you take someone 30 picks later, like Nick Castellanos, it's not it's not going to kill you. So I understand like the FOMO with Aaron Judge, but not taking him, I don't think is going to hurt you too much. But with Buxton, yeah, that speed can be a real difference maker. My FOMO guy going much earlier. I mean, you know, the shorter this season gets, I'm like, man, Ronald Acuña is right there.
I have none. I know. I'm with you.
Yeah. Like going to the back end of the first or into the second in some earlier drafts. I'm like, man, all those people that got Ronald Acuña really late, that late. And, you know, the shorter the season gets, the better the outlook is for Ronald Acuña. So that's going to be like my FOMO guy. And if we get this season going soon and get back to drafting, we'll see. I might have to take a share or two of Ronald Acuña. The only concern still for me is, you know, with the ACL injury, number one, how much is he going to run? Number two, a lot of times across different sports, we've seen guys coming off of ACL might be a little susceptible to like the soft tissue injuries. So like the hamstring type of injuries. So that maybe he still has a little bit more of a re-injury risk. But I mean, man, getting Ronald Acuña at the back of the first or even into the second, that's my FOMO guy right there.
Zach?
I mentioned it before. The Trout was my FOMO pick. In terms of Judge, I don't have FOMO for him. I probably won't end up with any shares of him. I mean, you got to love the potential with him and the upside with the power there. But his profile, just his 6'7 frame, it just has injury risk all over. I know he played the most games of his career last year. But just him and Stan, it leaves a huge
second most. Don't
leave such a bad taste in my mouth, and it's just very hard to trust them, especially that high where he's going. I'd rather wait, like George mentioned, 30 picks later for like a guy like Castellanos or a JD Martinez, somebody that I have more confidence in playing. Maybe sacrifice a little bit of the power. But I just trust those guys. That's why I probably won't be reaching for Judge in that territory. I find myself going for a lot of Wit in that territory, which made me want to propose the question to you guys. We were talking Marte. You mentioned Mullins before, and I'm throwing Wit out there. How would you guys rank Marte, Wit, and Mullins? Kind of similar profiles with the speed profiles. How would you guys rank those three?
I have it. I think I do toss it up between Wit and Mullins. I usually go Wit because of the multi-positional eligibility. That usually is like that difference-making factor for me. But Wit scares me in terms of age and soft contact and the need to compile. So I do believe, I think I usually, if I don't look at second base and think, you know what, I'll take Mullins probably more time. Okay. Let me stop. So I'll rank it Mullins, Merrifield, and Marte. I'm that low on Marte where I'm putting him. That's why I don't get him, because I still value. I would draft Marte in this range, but he's not going in this range.
So you're flip-flopping ADP. You're going reverse.
Yeah. I'm going Mullins, Witt, and Marte. Yeah. Witt stays place, but Marte, it's almost like I would switch Marte and Mullins' spot.
Yeah. What about you, George?
Yeah, I think I'm with Mike there with those rankings. I think, you know, I've seen Marte and Merrifield going like anywhere from the middle of the second to the back end of the second or early third. And I don't know, I haven't really been able to pull the trigger when I can get, you know, Cedric Mullins as the last of those three. I think it's a little more balanced. Like I know, you know, Merrifield, yes, 97 runs, 74 RBI out of the leadoff spot, but yeah, give me the 10 extra homers with Mullins, and I'll take that. I don't know, and then also the fact that you're looking at Merrifield and Marte, they're both what, 33, right? I mean, can we really expect them to both steal 40 plus bases again? I think if you're drafting them, you're not, you can't really expect 40 steals again. You're looking at maybe like more like 30, 25 to 30. So if I'm projecting Mullins to give me, you know, 20 to 25, I'm not sure there's a whole lot of difference there. And yeah, I'll take the more balanced profile.
Yeah, I agree with you guys on the order. I really like Merrifield this year. I mean, he is going to play. He does not, with that 145 game rule that you're talking about, Mike, he does not apply, because he plays every single game. So you know what, the power may not be there, but the runs will be there, and the stolen bases, that team runs a ton Whereas Marte, he's probably not going to get the opportunities. So I really like Merrifield in that spot. Really, it kind of depends on how you address your first round pick. But if you're looking for some speed and runs in that second, third round territory, Merrifield is a great buy right
there. Merrifield has 700 at bats every normal season going back to 2018. His last season that he didn't reach 700 bats was when he played, there's the number, 145 in 2017. But that's, I'm telling you, that's
34 bags.
If you start planning your process, like if you start planning your numbers around that 145 number, I feel like you're always gonna be safe, because I feel like if you can project a player to play 145 and they give you 155 or 150 or 160, it's bonus. So it's just one of those things, like prep for the floor, take the ceiling. But 145, just again, in today's game, you mentioned Witt's obviously the exception to the rule, but Yordan Alvarez, you know, he's literally going to get like 5 to 7 days off, just occasional, like every other week he'll get a day off probably. But then you factor in one IL stint, he's already there. So that's why my argument is, in today's game, IL stints happen, knick-knack injuries, and a couple of days off, before you know it, 140s is like the new 150s. That's why I think we overemphasize injury prone issues when players in general are just taking more time off than ever, playing it safer than ever, trying to get that new contract, or just, you know, not risking it. They'll take 2-3 days off with a sore hamstring and then play, re-aggravate it, and they're not for another couple days. So like that happens so much that we overemphasize, well, we need to get guys that play 150 to 150 to 160. And those players just are farther and fewer in between. Not that they don't exist. It's just, I just feel like we put too much emphasis on injury concerns sometimes, when really almost every player is just taking time off this year and usually gets at least one IL stint. It's very common. So I don't know. It's one of those things that I'm saying this kind of out of a feel for it. I'd have to actually go look at the numbers. But if I feel pretty, like it feels, maybe I'm just wrong. I don't know. I feel like every time I look at a player, it's like, this guy's going through an IL stint. This guy, like, I just pulled up the games played leaders. Only 7 players played 160 games last year. Let's go to 155. Only 29 players started 155. You see, so I'm not crazy. Like, you get to like, now when you start creeping to the 150s, okay, it's like 50 players played. So yeah, see, okay, 100. Okay, so yeah, you start getting to that top 100, less than 100 players, less than 100 players total in the whole Major League Baseball played 140 games last year, less than 100. 98 players played 140 games or more. And we overemphasize all these players, not like, you know, oh, we have to be careful. Josh Donaldson played 135 games. That was 110th most games played last year. This is among qualified players. Obviously, qualified players are going to be the only ones that even play this many games. So you get my point. My point is we overemphasize these injury issues when Josh Donaldson played the 110th most games last year.
It's pretty wild that Donaldson, Stanton, and Judge are probably all in that top 100 list.
Stanton played the 99th most games last year among qualified hitters, which, again, all these guys are going to qualify because these are guys that played enough to qualify. So my point is this is something that we overemphasize in our analysis, when really, give me 140 games. That's a top 100 game player right there. Sorry, but like maybe this isn't the norm every year. And again, COVID probably factored into this. But I'd like, if we go back, I'm going to go back again. Now I'm on a tangent because now I'm curious. I'm going to go back to 2019 real quick. 2019 was a normal season, right? Nothing crazy happened there. Let's go look at the game total. Oh, look, it's trending the same way, actually. One second, one more click. So the 140 goes to, there was, oh, look at that. The 90, it looks like 100 players, less than 100 players again. Maybe, okay, so I lied. It might be right around 100 players because there are a lot of ties. That's my fault. I didn't think about the fact that players are tying in all this. So there's over 100 players. My argument is a little debunked. Maybe closer to 120 players then, because I'm looking at like multiple 141s, 142s, 143s. Damn it, now I need to get a real number. It's going to bother me. I need to get a real number. Because, you know, I'm looking next to, like, on Fangraphs, I'm literally looking at the games played and then I'm looking at the rank of the player.
Who led the league in games played in 2019?
I have to restart. Hold on. I have to restart the whole search. Games played. It's working. 162. 5 people played 162 games. Castro, Merrifield, Soler, VR of all people, and Semien. And then still only 12 players played 160 plus. But yeah, wait.
It's a good, it's a good number of players, though.
But yeah, I'm looking at this. I'm trying to figure out how to look, because 155, 30. Yeah, it gives you the number. Okay, I'm not crazy then.
No, you are.
No, because 140 games, but then number 91 player, right? Like, I'm not crazy. It shows you the number of the player, and then the games played to the right of them, right?
Yes.
So yeah, I'm not crazy the way I was doing it.
There was just a lot of guys that played in a lot of games, a lot more games in 2019.
No, but I'm talking about, like, if you go look at number 100, Eddie Rosario played in just 137 games. So my argument still holds true that 140 games is not, it's not as common as we think.
Yeah.
So yes, okay, my whole argument was true. All this to say, I was right that we might just.
Took you long enough.
Took me long enough to get there. I'm gonna go look at 2018 in the process.
Though, no, please don't.
In the process, let's move down to the next 15 or so names. This is where we get kind of interesting. Tyler O'Neill, Randy Rosarena. Listen, I'm sorry, but that ended up being worth the look because I ended up being right in my theory so far. And yeah, that's all I wanted to say. But so yeah, we start getting these interesting names: O'Neill, Rosarena, George Springer, Castellanos, Eloy. We all hate, I know I hate Tommy Edman. We've talked about this on this podcast before. Varsho, for all intents and purposes, is a catcher. I don't really, this area, I don't like to dabble in too much. I tend to maybe grab a couple here. We all love Brian Reynolds. We can agree there, right?
Hell yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Would you take Brian Reynolds or Nick Castellanos in a vacuum? Obviously, you can get them way, like, 20 plus picks apart.
I would still take Castellanos. I mean, I love Brian Reynolds. But yeah, I mean, I would still, the power ceiling for Castellanos is still, you know, considerably higher, I think, for me. I love Brian Reynolds. And then also, you got to think at Castellanos, he's going to sign in probably a favorable situation. So, unless Brian Reynolds gets traded, which is very much possible, we've heard him in some trade rumors, but just within the context of where they're playing or where he's playing right now and where Castellanos could end up, I'm still going to take Castellanos.
In a vacuum, I would go Castellanos as well. But depending on team context, and I mean, if you can grab somebody in that range of Castellanos and grab Reynolds on the way back, I'm completely fine with that. Back to what you just said for a second there, George. Do you guys know, the Reynolds trade rumors are out there. Do you know, can teams be discussing with other teams about trades? Like, can we possibly have like a ton of trades on the table? They're just waiting for the approval and then all these trades go through. Is that a thing? I was under the assumption that it could not happen.
Why? But the owners can't talk to the owners. The players talk to the players. I mean, it's one of those things that the GMs aren't supposed to be talking to the owners, I would guess, right?
GMs can be talking to other GMs.
I don't know how that works. I know the front office, like, you hear the players not talk, like, they can't have their training staff, so I doubt they can have their GMs. By the way, 104 players played 140 in 2018. So my point is that 140 mark.
We're still barely going down this rabbit hole, huh?
Yes. 2017 time. Anyway, but Brian Reynolds is like one of our go-to guys here. But there's a lot of like upside, no commodities, a little bit of injury risk mixed in here. Who are some of your favorites, George, that you'll target?
From this range, aside from Reynolds, which, I mean, I think after Castellanos, he might be my favorite. We're talking about, like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know if there's like a 26 pick difference. Like, I'd rather have him over Ketel Marte just for the safety, over Tommy Edman, that's for sure.
Tommy Edman will be on none of our teams. So can we all get this out of the way that me, at least you and I, are fading him pretty heavily? Zach, are you fading Tommy Edman too?
Yeah, I likely won't have any Edmund shares at that price.
108 people played 140 or more in 2017. So it slowly has gone down. But again, COVID and all that. But still, barely. we're talking about barely 100 players here, guys. All right. Anyway.
We're talking about Reynolds, Edmonds, and then we're going back to 2018.
2017.
Wasn't this all about Aaron Judge, right? We just draft Aaron Judge already.
Well, no, this is about... Well, don't worry, because one of my guys here I really like, and I finally got a share... I'm not quitting Ketel Marte, and I know he can't stay healthy, but give me 140, Ketel. Give me 140. Yeah. So, Ketel Marte is a guy that I think he pairs very well with Brian Reynolds. You get your injury risk with upside, and you get your floor. Unfortunately, Ketel Marte doesn't bring a strong enough plus skill anywhere, like Reynolds belongs on a team where if you take an upside, like if you take Tyler O'Neill, Reynolds is a great pairing partner for that. You don't want to, you don't need to necessarily pair Reynolds with Marte because the skill sets aren't different enough. So Marte, it doesn't make sense to me to pair Marte's injury risk with a guy with such a high floor when the production ultimately ends up being the same if Marte's healthy.
Right. So these guys like Reynolds and Marte, like their profiles, they're the kind of guys that I would take because you probably won't need to and you probably won't be able to, depending on where you're picking, get both. But like if I took someone like Javi Baez or Jazz Chisholm, I'm immediately looking at Ketel Marte and Brian Reynolds, more so Reynolds. But the other guy in this range that I have a lot of, and I'm not finding myself with too many of these guys just because like comparatively, like I really like the pitching that's going in this range. So like I'm getting a lot of Trevor Rogers, Frankie Montas, I like guys like that. So, but the other guy I have a lot of is Arozarena going at 60. And I look at Arozarena as the pretty much one of the last like 2020 guys that you could build off of. So like, especially if I went pitching early, like if I got a pitcher in the first or second round and I took a closer in the, like the second or third, maybe I doubled up on starting pitching in the first four picks and I have like one hitter. Arozarena for me is like the last guy going at pick 60 here, the last like 2020 guy that you could build from if you don't want to have to target like the speed only guys later on, like a Tommy Edman. Like I don't want to have to go get a Tommy Edman or a Miles Straw, or Nicky Lopez, guys like that. So yeah, I look at Arozarena going at pick 60 as the one of the last, like, you know, relatively safe 2020 kind of guys that you could build from.
Arozarena is weird to me. Like I have a hard time because of the strikeout rate. And in the second half, looking at Arozarena's splits, he had like a really strong second half, you know, upped his batting average over 50 points, up to slugging 147 points, WRC plus from 107 to 158. So the dude had a killer second half. ISO almost 100 points higher, but the strikeout rate was 30%. Like, I don't understand. The mixture of the two don't make sense to me. I understand in today's game, strikeout rate isn't everything, but I feel like that leads to potential for volatility. And Arozarena, but I do agree, like he is pretty much Cedric Mullins. I just feel like the difference between him and Mullins obviously is Mullins is a safer bet for playing time because the Rays are going to Ray, you know? And if, you know, last year he hit 257 and had over 100 WRC plus against righties, Arozarena did. But if he struggles out the gate against righties and slows down, they'll platoon him until he gets going. And the stolen base success rate wasn't the best. He got caught 10 times out of his 20 out of his 30 attempts. At least that's
He went 20 for 30. But the fact that he attempted 30 steals, like I'm not sure. I mean, maybe it might depend on
again. How I'm the goal here is to poke holes into like because we're at this range where everybody here has their warts, and his could be a mix of like strikeout issues paired with maybe not running as much because he wasn't as successful on the base pass. And we saw them shut Wander down really quick on the base pass last year, and he actually was 2-for-2 initially. So it's really weird. Just don't know what, like, do they not want to run into outs because they have, you know, the better hitters in the middle of the order? And if they actually do land Freeman, which I doubt they do, but they're talking, you know, they've been talking about it. I just think it's just an interesting conversation to have.
Yeah.
That's all. That's all my goal was here, to make you doubt it a little bit. Zach, how about you? Is there anybody here that you really have to have on your team? Or, well, obviously, again, outside of Reynolds. I do like Jesse Winker a lot, but I understand the splits against lefties. I just wanted to put that out there. I get it. I understand. But leadoff, crushes righties, great day plate discipline, adding average, power. I love Jesse Winker. But I do understand he can't hit a lefty. I get it.
Do you like Winker? Hopefully he can eventually figure out those issues against lefties.
Just be mediocre. I just need mediocre production against lefties. But he plays for the Reds, who are not going to sit him at all. So there's that.
No Castellanos anymore. Weaker lineup. And he has to stay healthy. He always seems to have a freak injury every year. Back injury, something.
I know. It's so aggravating. It's
frustrating because he's usually tearing it up before he does that.
I grab him as a batting average stabilizer. But I like to grab him for batting average and power in this part of the draft because I tend to, you know, maybe I take a little risk on my batting average early. Like I'll grab a Semien or a Story. And I think Winker pairs really well because I usually aim for Reynolds, miss on Reynolds. And I'm like, oh, well, Winker, here we go. Because I think Winker has that skill set of Reynolds but can't stay healthy like Reynolds. So that's where the difference is. Like if Winker played 130 games a year, even I want 140, but I'll take 130. And but Winker, seriously, like, Winker is, there's not real there's not a real difference in terms of skill set, like when it comes to batting average, hit tool. There's even more power there for Winker in terms of, like, between Winker and Reynolds. I just, the health is obviously why you should take Winker after him, but I do like Jesse Winker a lot. But anyway,
if Winker,
sorry.
If Winker can play like your 145 games, I mean,
140.
I mean, he definitely could be a top 50 player. He really, he's looked great in his limited time the past few years. So we'll see if he can actually put that all together this year for a change. Other than Reynolds, I mean, the two guys that I've been targeting, it depends on team build, but if you're able to secure some speed early on and then you attack, whether it be get your relief ace or get some starting pitching in some of those early rounds and you're looking for power, I mean, I really like JD Martinez and I really like Kyle Schwarber. JD's going around the top 100, about 96, and Schwarber's going 132. I mean, Kyle Schwarber last year, with the Sox, Red Sox and the Nationals, I mean, he had 32 homers in 113 games, which is just absurd. I mean, he had a ridiculous stretch. Granted, a lot of those games were with the Nationals against the Mets, where he just absolutely crushed the Mets and the rest of the NLEs pretty much. But, dude, he was just unbelievable last year, kind of finally living up to those expectations. I mean, he posted career high barrel rate of 17.5, max EV of 116. I mean, he looked like the real deal last year, and it's going to depend on where he signs. I mean, there's rumors of Colorado, which, yeah, I don't even know if I want to deal with that headache, honestly. I'm sure he would play every day, but it would be nice maybe if he goes back to the Red Sox. Seemed to be a good fit there. But I think there's going to be a lot of teams going for him once this free agent frenzy begins. And JD Martinez, I mean, we saw maybe a few seasons where he kind of took a step back, whether it be injuries or not being able to watch video, kind of struggled maybe a little bit. The 2020, the shortened season, granted, a lot of people did as well, but he seemed to kind of turn things around last year. 28 homers, 99 RBIs, and he's projected for around 30 and 100 again this year in a really strong Red Sox lineup. I just think him and Alex Cora really brings out the best of these players. Another guy that we'll talk about later, I'm sure, Kike Hernandez. This is a team that I want a lot of guys on. And JD is right in the middle of that order. If you're looking for a good power source, if you miss out on like a Vlad or a Judge, these are good guys at the back end of 100 or the 130 range that you can definitely target.
Yeah, and by the way, 2016, 118 players did it. So it's only gone down every year. And how about this? Yasmani Tomas hit 31 home runs that year.
Wow, that's a throwback.
Yeah. And he never did anything after that, I don't think. That was the year that's like, oh, it all came together. And Gregory Polanco had 22-17 home runs and stolen bases that year. Wow. Now he's in Asia, I think. So that's fun. Hey, Nomar Mazara put up a 20 home run season. Shocker. That's what he's done every year pretty much. Okay. Anyway,
this should be your next article.
2016 standouts, where are they now? Hey, DJ LeMahieu, still DJ LeMahieu, 11-11. Hitting 348. All right.
Anyway,
it's just fun. It's fun to look back. But anyway, oh, Hanley, Bryce Harper, 24-21 season. Okay. I can do this all night. This is fun. I'm just looking at other names. Oh, real quick, I'm not honestly drafting either Bellinger or Yelich. I feel like I could build the team just fine without either one. Do either of you want either of those players? Because I know I'm just kind of like, I'm okay being out and missing either or missing on both. If I had to pick one, I'm picking Bellinger. But yeah, so are either of you guys drafting one of these two? And regardless, which one do you prefer if you had to pick one?
I haven't taken either. And it seems every draft I've been in, like, they're on my radar and I just keep putting them off and they keep falling and falling. And I'm thankful that somebody else ends up taking the plunge on both of them. I don't have any shares. I probably won't unless they fall way past their ADP of around 100. I mean, if we get to like the 120 range, okay, maybe I'll consider it, but more than likely I will not. And I probably would prefer a bounce back year from Bellinger rather than Yelich. The back injury the back injury and just hitting the ball on the ground constantly is a huge concern, and I really don't want any part of it. I have multiple dynasty shares and I'm desperate to unload them, and it's not going to be easy, but Bellinger is probably my preferred choice, although I'd rather have neither.
George?
Yeah, we're going to go 3 for 3 here on Bellinger. I do have, I think, one or two shares of Bellinger, and I think for me, if I'm going to take either one of these guys, I think he has a higher chance of bouncing back. I look at 2020, and really, you know, wasn't a whole lot different than what he had been doing the previous three seasons. It was really just the BABIP. 245 BABIP led to a 239 average in that shortened 2020 season, but he still hit 12 home runs, stole 6 bases. And last year, I mean, I really think he was pretty much just injured all year, and it was one thing after another for Bellinger. Yeah, I mean, as long as he's healthy, I like Bellinger between these two. I'm not gonna have too much because there is certainly quite a bit of risk. So, but yeah, if I'm gonna take a chance on one, it'll be Bellinger.
Oh man, I just realized, guys, it's over. It's been about an hour, and we haven't even touched the other half of the player pool. This is it.
Maybe because you went through the last 5 years of plate appearances or at, games played.
I am not loading 2015 up as we speak right now. I am not. Okay, I lied. I am. I'm just debating, do we push through or do we just do a part two? Honestly, I feel like a part two is better off. And by the way, only 109 in 2015. It played 140
Anthony
games.
Anthony Ghost, the great the Cleveland pitcher.
Hey, but how about that Ryan Braun 25-24 season, though? Yeah, I'm losing my mind. I think we're going to have to do a part two, guys. I was hoping to do it all in one night, but...
What did we get to? We got to about, like, the top 30.
But...
We'll do part two, 30 to 60.
No, we'll do part two, no, we 30 got to, through we the got rest. Past,
yeah.
We got to, like, well, 30.
We talked... You have to remember, we talked strategy. We focused on the higher rounds a little longer than I thought we were going to. So we unfortunately didn't go as smoothly as planned. So we're going to have to do a part two. So I'm going to call it wraps here. Don't forget to check us out on Spotify, wherever you get, you know what, wherever you listen to us, 5-star rating reviews, greatly appreciated. SKPlaybook.com. I forgot to plug this at the beginning, guys. You're supposed to help me out with this. We obviously have our chat and all that good stuff. Check us out there. I think that's everything. Obviously, check out my work over at The Athletic, SK Playbook as well, George at NBC Sports Edge, and SK Playbook on occasion. And then Zach just hanging chill out with us. Listen, man, everybody has all their guests right now. We have each other. Better than nothing,
that's
right?
That's all we need. The three amigos.
Yeah, something like that. All right. As always, we appreciate you listening. Don't forget to check us out on Twitter. George is at @Roto_Nino. Zach is at @BravZ. I'm the best at @Mike_Curland. But appreciate you all listening, of course, as always. And we'll talk to you all very soon.